Welcome again to Left, Right and Centre. I am Chris.
With echoes and S's. I'm Timothy.
I'm Matteo, triumphantly announcing my return to the airwaves. What a long 14 days without me that was.
I know the feeling.
Yeah. And where's Casey?
Casey, I think he's just a bit tired. He's decided to stay home. He's caught what you had, I think, too.
Yeah,
just lethargy.
Lethargy.
I have that's a permanent, excessive eating. That's a permanent deal for me.
Well, yeah. he certainly doesn't have any exams to be doing tomorrow morning or anything, so...
I think it would be fair to say, and I'm sure you'll agree, that if Tim were an animal, it would be a sloth.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and sloth is a sin, and you're not down with that, right, Tim?
Well, no, but when you use it as like an animal, that's cool.
Because the animal is a cool one.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, just lounges around all day doing nothing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What have we got on the show this week?
Well, we're going to have a talk about some interesting civil liberties issues coming out of the United States.
Yeah, we're also going to talk about interesting news coming out of Honduras, Central America.
Honduras, you say?
In the past week. Yeah, yeah, not Haiti, not the Dominican Republic, Honduras.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to be talking about a not-so-famous American governor. We're not talking about Arnie. I'd like to talk about Arnie.
Unfortunately, we'd all love to have a long chat about Arnie. Well, couldn't quite manage it. Instead, Tim, have you been growing a bit of a beard lately?
I have, and apparently it's a big deal.
You should keep it, Tim.
It's all a buzz.
There's an often repeated adage, you can't fool a man with a beard.
That's an adage that you've been repeating for 3 days.
It is often repeated, as I say, Tim.
Does the adage mean that you can't fool a man who has a beard, or you cannot fool a man with a beard? You cannot use a beard to fool a man.
You can definitely use a beard to fool a man. You certainly cannot fool a man who has a beard, just to clarify.
I like the beard. It's a good look. It's almost as good as the one I've been
growing. Tim's going to cut it off on Friday. I think that's a travesty. If you agree, there will be a picture of him up on the Facebook group in Left, Right and Centre in the next couple of days.
Which you should just go on anyway.
Which you should just go on there and comment and say, Tim, keep the beard. We love your beard. Please keep the beard. You look awesome with your beard.
And I will dutifully ignore that. Without the Facebook account, I wouldn't know whether...
That's how you roll.
Well, all right. That's what we've got coming up on the show. And I think it's good that you know the Left, Right and Centre product. I think you should also learn to know a different product, which is a song by The Saints called... Know Your Product. That was a tedious and unnecessary segue.
I like
this. Here is the song.
Student radio at O-Week on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM. As studious as you are.
Very long horn ending there by The Saints with Know Your Product. Short, sharp. That's the way I'm back announcing.
That's the name of the game, as opposed to your intro. Tim, is it true? I've heard a rumour that's been making the rounds, non-beard related, that you have something of a... slight passing interest.
I'd call it a slight passing obsession.
Okay. We use that word. We use your word, Chris. Obsession. With the old SCOTUS.
SCOTUS.
All right.
SCOTUS.
Okay.
SCOTUS. It can also be pronounced Scouser.
It can be. That would be incorrect.
No. Supreme Court of... And of the United States of America. Scouser.
I would like to apologize for the conduct of my co-hosts there. Yes, it is true. I have a passing interest in the United States Supreme Court.
Yeah, limited but not including to, in fact, downloading the podcasts.
Yeah,
of
the oral arguments before the court. And so I like to think, you know, I pick up on some interesting cases. And I think we're going to have a talk about an interesting case because recently the court has been handing down opinions on, decisions, I suppose. Although they're called opinions, on some interesting cases. And I'd first of all like to make the disclaimer that none of us are law students, but I think we do all right for...
We try anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's one of the interesting cases that's come up recently. In October 2003, an eighth grader who was 13 years old was suspected of distributing ibuprofen in the school.
And, yeah, prescription drugs.
Prescription drugs. And a fellow student had tipped off the teachers and said, look, well, I think this person has drugs. She was subjected to a search of her backpack and that, you know, there was no pills found, no drugs. And so she was led in, this was all at the behest of the principal, and she was then led into a separate room where two female school officers conducted a strip search where she was required to remove all her clothes and check her underwear.
Except for her underwear. And then, they were forced to, like, they forced her to sort of, like, pull them off her body so that they could...
And so this has been making its way through the American legal system, and the court has handed down its decision today saying that they found that as a... was unconstitutional and was not a reasonable search. So I'm just wondering what we think about that. Because one of the issues here is that in the United States, adults enjoy protection from the Fourth Amendment, which says that they won't be subjected to unreasonable searches of their property and their houses and their papers and things.
But minors aren't granted that same right.
Yeah, well, essentially, the history of it is that the you know, while adults, that somebody requires what's called probable cause.
Yep.
And a child, somebody just has to have reasonable suspicion if it's a child grounds.
Yeah, so school officials specifically can conduct searches with reasonable suspicion rather than probable cause.
Which is a lower standard of proof, evidence, I suppose. Yeah. And I was just thinking, what we're going to have...
Well, so, I mean, I guess not only does it bring into... Well, obviously not just doubt about its constitutionality. It was, you know, proved beyond all doubt, really, by a decision made by the Supreme Court. But also just... the huge invasiveness of something like this, because I think it was Ruth Bader Ginsburg who she's, I believe, a justice of the Supreme Court,
one of the left wing of the court, yeah.
Mm. She actually said, I thought it was quite interesting, she said that perhaps an issue that the male members of the court didn't quite understand or didn't quite comprehend was just how hugely, hugely, utterly embarrassing this would have been for a girl of that age.
And I think...
Thanks, Chris. But because with that being too churlish, 13 is just a hugely, hugely impressionable age. The opinions of peers, especially, at an American high school is pretty much their paramount. And news of such... you know, hugely invasive search would have absolutely gotten out.
Yeah, that is one of the things that Ginsburg highlighted. And she said that because all of the other justices are men, are they, Tim?
Mm-hmm. So there are 9 justices, and she's the only woman.
And I believe one of her comments was that they simply don't know what it's like to be a 13-year-old girl, and they don't know the insecurities you have about your body at that age. And the other thing for me, the other key issue, and this is something that the justices did touch on in their findings, is that that it wasn't perhaps a proportional response in the sense that the drugs were not sufficiently dangerous. Even if there was reason to think she had them, they weren't sufficiently dangerous.
They were pain relievers, not even pain killers. Yeah. Just it's like, oh, well, I have a headache, but apparently that warrants invasive strip search.
The power of the illegal substance didn't really seem to justify the search. Mm.
And I think that's all well and good, but they talked about, well, the proportionality wasn't there. The extent to which they went in the search and the second search, which was the strip search, was not proportional to the evidence and the suspicion that they had against her. But I'm sort of concerned with a country that has a Bill of Rights, and the Fourth Amendment is quite explicit, the right of the people to secure in their persons against unreasonable searches and seizures. It's quite explicit, and I'm not entirely comfortable with the body of 9 unelected, eight men and 1 woman, throwing away that right for students and interpreting it away in that way.
But Tim, surely all they're doing is in.
They are explicitly creating 2 classes of citizens here, and the protection there. And this is, I suppose, one of those interesting situations. I would wonder what you would think of that.
What I'd say to that, Tim, is that I don't think children are in a position to be treated in the same way as adults. I don't think they're fully formed human beings, and I don't think it's reasonable to expect them to behave and live in the same way as adults.
But by the same token, I don't think that means that they don't warrant equality before the law. I mean, if they're not afforded... by the Bill of Rights or the Constitution, if someone doesn't have to have probable cause to search the belongings of a child just because a child perhaps can't give informed consent because of their youth, the only dissenter I believe in the initial ruling, Tim, was Clarence Thomas, who's a conservative and he's a noted federalist, so he'll always he's something of a stickler for the Constitution.
Yeah. Well, I think, but that wasn't. What's one of the things that surprised me was that wasn't even the response he made. His was much more a technical response, which was that he didn't think it was an unreasonable or disproportionate extent to go to, and which just sort of I don't know. I just think it's interesting that this court, in parts is quite overt about a judicial activism.
Tim, I don't necessarily disagree with that proposition, actually, in theory, but I think the fact is what the justices are saying is that it's not constitutional according to the way the law currently exists. And I know something you often argue is that the issue is not whether it should be or how it should be, but whether in fact it is.
Yeah, but my point is that they have extra to the terms of the right, have created a secondary class and applied it to this. And, you know, whether I'd just say, you know, finally, the issue about informed consent, I think can, you know, I think it's fair enough differentiating between adults and children on the grounds of informed consent, but consent has very little to do with in terms of you know, grounds on which you can arrest people and search them.
Yeah, I'm not sure many adults would willingly give their consent to be searched.
And
like
in that respect, I'm slightly uncomfortable with it. Anyway, I'd like to think that's an interesting debate. Well, I think we'll go to this now.
Do you have any idea how hard it is to write for the radio? Of course not, you idiot. That would make about as much sense as the train of thought which crossed my mind when sitting on a park bench earlier today. It was about 4:30, the time when ridiculous thoughts are rampant, and with no prompting, the thought suddenly occurred to me, I wonder if I can make that bird come over using only my mind powers. But I digress. The point is, you have no idea how difficult it is to come up with comedy gold like this on a weekly or even semi-bi-weekly basis, and this needs to be resolved. A hobby of mine is recording original music, a process fraught with obstacles, or in Greek, obstacles. The process can only be undergone at all during 2 of every 4 weeks while my father is away, because I need to use his laptop. Furthermore, it can only be done on days when no one else is home because there can be no ambient noise, which leaves only 2 days of each month. Then come the actual recording problems. When recording a new track, the program must play back all previously recorded tracks, so earphones must be worn to prevent the old tracks bleeding into the new ones, which means a hunched, uncomfortable posture is necessary due to the length of the cord of the phones. And when moving around to pick up another instrument, you must disentangle yourself first, lest your ears be pulled from their ear moorings. Then when you put on a guitar, you must disentangle the strap from the earphones, and you cannot hold any combination of the iPod, earphones, or any musical instrument without experiencing a sizable electric shock. Finally, and perhaps most irritatingly of all, last summer I had a new unit installed in the ceiling of my room, which is a combined fan and light bulb. The installation is such that the wall switch has become a master switch, which merely allows the remote to turn on the light or fan. The problem is that the master switch needs to be on for either the light or fan to work, but if the master switch is on, both the fan and light have a tendency to turn themselves on and off, apparently at random. This means not only that if I want to use either of them, there is a chance that I'll have to put up with both, neither, or only the one that I don't want, but also that I can't use either when I record on a laptop, because the fan creates an unacceptable background noise level. The practical result of this is that I must record in pitch darkness. Now you may wonder exactly what this has to do with my original point about writing for the radio, and the answer is, not an awful lot. But at the very least, it does shed a light on exactly how hard writing for radio is, given that I persist in recording music, but I've given up trying to think of an end to this segment.
What are we going to talk about now?
We are going to talk about the South Carolina governor, Mr. Mark Sanford, who has been a very naughty man. What he's done is he has actually had an extramarital affair, which he tried to cover up. He almost succeeded, in fact. It turns out that he was carrying out this affair with who he calls a dear friend of his, an Argentinian woman.
In Argentina.
In Argentina, in fact, for some 12 months, 5 of which the governor's wife actually was aware of. And they were exchanging emails and the like. And basically this...
Hold on. The wife and the mistress?
No, the mistress and the governor. Well, not mistress, maybe. Woman. Anyway.
No, but hold on. All the news reports I've said have said mistress.
Well, perhaps they're misrepresenting her.
Anyway.
As some scarlet woman.
Hold on. Mistress doesn't have to be a scarlet woman. Perfectly respectable.
And basically, Chris, this last time he disappeared for the better part of a week, I believe. His campaign office said that he was hiking the Appalachian Trail. Which was a good story, but actually the last location of his whereabouts was some 80 miles away from the beginning of the Appalachian Trail, and that was before he got to Argentina.
He just went AWOL.
He just went AWOL. And actually, this may not have been picked up unless it was for a very intrepid Republican state senator who was actually generally concerned about his safety, who now is actually part of the growing Republican chorus anyway, for Mr. Sanford to actually step down because, of course, the GOP is not, you know, used to controversies like this.
Mm, indeed. Yeah, so I thought, I mean, this is obviously an interesting article, and it came to a head in a hilarious manner. He went AWOL for a week. Nobody knew where he'd been. Turns up it had an affair.
Bizarre manner, yeah.
But I think this is an avenue to open into a wider discussion, which is, I mean, how do we think the personal conduct, especially with relationship to extramarital affairs, how do we think that should affect the populace's view and respect for somebody's policies?
Well, look, my argument, Tim, and this is actually something that I've been quite keen to discuss for a while, is that as long as the sort of like, you know, the scandal or the extramarital affair or whatever it is doesn't affect their performance as, you know, a public servant, or not as a public servant in the sense that they're, but, you know, as someone
as
who
an
represents
elected representative.
People, an elected representative, as long as it doesn't affect their conduct in that respect, then I don't think it's relevant.
But, I absolutely understand what you say, but it's actually, I think it's because of their role as an elected representative of the country or the area of the country that they're from is actually why it matters. I think it's precisely why it matters, because the people are electing a politician, but they're also electing someone who does represent them, whether it's abroad or in other parts of the country. And to say that this doesn't have an effect not only on how they're perceived, but
Mateo,
how they do their job.
It does once it's out, but if it's not in the public sphere, then it doesn't affect how they're seen at all. It doesn't affect how they're viewed by other states. It doesn't affect how they're viewed by other countries. And it only becomes an issue when the issue comes out.
Yeah, and I think what point you would make is that it's more in a way that the media should behave, control itself, in that this is not really relevant to the public interest.
And you'll note actually that's something that happens in Australia. There are hardly any, like the only one that came out was the Cheryl Kernow Gareth Evans thing, really, in Australia in the last decade or so.
Mm.
And that was relevant because there was a suggestion that the relationship had began before Cheryl Kernow joined the Labor Party, and therefore there might be, you know, an effect on how she was making decisions.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's a conflict of interest issue.
Yeah. But of course, keep in mind that if the media hasn't reported on it because they haven't found it, then obviously... Because a lot of the effect is caused by the media. A lot of the destabilisation is caused by the media, because the media does have a huge influence on the perception of the public. It shapes it really in large part. But I think, I mean, the touchstone in this issue, I guess maybe it's a bit inevitable that we'll get to it, is of course Bill Clinton, and there are those who argue that that his extramarital affairs did affect his presidency. There are those who say that they did not.
Well, look, there's something here. As you know, you'll all be aware that I'm arguing that this wasn't relevant to the governor's conduct. But I would like to say, and Tim, I hope this is something you don't object to too strenuously, but I just know that Governor Sanford, he was, you know, like, standing there when Clinton was being exposed, saying, oh, you know, that fucking Clinton, you just know he was just sort of standing there berating him, saying, Clinton, what a nasty little man. Look at what he's
doing.
What
a piece of work.
Exactly. And well, look, and a lot of the issues involved with this kind of thing go to morality. I mean, a lot of the way, certainly with the conservative side of politics, people think about a moral code, and I'm certainly not. I'm partial to that. That's not an argument that falls on deaf ears when I hear it. But I think a lot of this can miss the point, and a lot of talking about the principle of you know, extramarital affairs and whether or not we're enforcing some moral code on our public servants, I think misses the point. I think there are very good practical reasons why this kind of thing it shouldn't be done, and when it is done, it should be revealed in appropriate ways. And I would cite, you know, there is, you know, first and foremost, significant possibility if these things are not revealed by media and in appropriate ways by media, there are significant possibilities for political blackmail. And I think that is a very big deal. When there's something like this that can tarnish people's reputation and media are inclined to keep it secret, the potential for blackmail increases greatly. And I think that's one of the benefits of having a large-scale primary process like they do in the United States. This kind of thing comes out.
Yeah.
They did with John Edwards in the Democratic primaries.
I think the other issue, and this is why I think the other issue is that it becomes an issue for me when, if asked, the politicians in question lie about it, because that suggests something about their behaviour as politicians. So the behaviour of Clinton became a problem for me at the point at which he denied the affair.
Well, I don't even think it was that, though. I mean, he denied the affair, fair enough, but the reason he was good, the Republicans went after him because he denied it under oath, years earlier.
Okay,
he had denied affairs, and he actually committed perjury.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think... You know,
the thing you can, if we link this back to the governor, the issue is he left. You know, he didn't tell anyone where he was for 7 days, and in a sense, that's you know, like it's a dereliction of duty as his role as governor. Well, so for me, it's a problem because he's not effectively representing the people of his state.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't told anyone where he is.
But I still think it can be expanded further than that. I still think in general, these sort of... I obviously believe that, conduct like that, extramarital affairs, is something that no person should engage in. But I think, especially when politicians do, I do think there is an obligation for the media to reveal it. And I do think it should have an effect on the way people vote and how they deal with them.
And can I just say, perhaps as a closing remark, I think it's furthermore a dereliction of duty because... you know, obviously the electorate representatives are elected under the presupposition, the assumption that, well, really they will be a good, if not role model, but, you know, precisely that, a representative of, you know, whatever constituency they have. And really such things as this, you know, do tarnish their image for better or worse, and they do tend to get out. That's why they become issues.
And thankfully, it makes their position untenable in situations like this.
Well, look, Matteo, as you know, I sort of disagree really with that, but I think that's what makes this show interesting and good. And I think if you want to keep that interestingness and that goodness and that sort of deliciousness and more tedious segues, you should subscribe to Radio Adelaide.
Absolutely. That was a good segue.
Not just for left, right and centre, though. Radio Adelaide brings hours and hours of quality broadcasting.
There's quality entertainment all across the board at all times of the day.
Especially, with student radio, there's Break It Down with Lou and Bryce, Break It Down with, you know, others.
Gus and Miles,
Mary,
Chrissy.
Maria, Chrissy. Yep. And also, of course, Rube Radio.
Rube Radio. You got Blue Monkey Jazz. You got some other show on Thursday night. That's not as good.
Fantastic shows, day to day and
well,
so on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the thing is, subscribing, it's so easy as well. It costs you $52, or if, like us, your concession card holder,
it's only $26.
It costs you half that.
Yeah.
$26, which is $1 every 2 weeks.
It's all tax deductible.
It's all tax deductible. So you just call us up on 8335000.
Or come into the station.
Yeah, and we might be there. You can say hello to us.
228 North Terrace.
Absolutely. And a bit of a boon for you. If you subscribe to Radio Adelaide in July, which it has been for all of 35 minutes now, you will go into the draw to win a Romance in the Wilderness package for two at the Kangaroo Island Wilderness Retreat, which is valued at a stunning $1,100.
This is student radio at Adelaide Uni. I'm 101.5.
And nor can I stick it to the man, Sixto Rodriguez.
Yeah, you go, Mr. Bearded Man. I'm almost certain he has a beard.
What do you reckon we should do now, guys?
I think we should do what we do every week.
Which is this.
Where's Casey?
Whoa. Oh, shit. We might have to cancel Rapid Fire News. Casey,
No.
He's the only one qualified to read the news.
Yeah, no, the only thing we can do is make the noise.
He only has a reading degree.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he has a degree of readology.
I guess. Look, guys. I guess I could try,
well,
right, we'll but tr- I, like I can't promise the quality.
We'll try to fill the breach. Yeah, we'll see how you go.
It's big boots to fill. Small shoes, big
all
boots.
Right, all right, give it a go.
Let's do the noise again. Okay, here goes. Wish me luck. Britney Spears is not dead, and Norris Sean P. Diddy Combs or Ellen DeGeneres, says the Examiner. This latest revelation follows a message left on Britney's Twitter account declaring that Britney has passed today. It is a sad day for everyone. More news to come. It has since emerged, however, that Britney has not passed away, but instead been twacked or Twitter hacked. According to Britney's agent, the last message is obviously not true. She is fine and dandy and spending a quiet day at home relaxing. So, Tim, how serious a problem do you think twacking is in contemporary life? What do you think the repercussions would be for your life if someone tweeted on your, on your Twitter page saying you'd died, or posted doctored photos of you engaging in intercourse with a cactus?
Well, I don't think either of those things are a possibility. I have the virtue of not having a Twitter account nor any other social networking account, and I'm very glad for it. And can I just say I'm deeply offended at the use of the word twack? I'm pretty sure that's not a real thing.
Fair enough. And Tim, I probably should apologise. You know, I thought maybe that the question would get something of a spiky reception, but I thought I'd push on anyway.
And can I just say I'm very thankful that not only is Britney Spears still with us, and Sean P. Diddy Combs, and Ellen DeGeneres, and Jeff Goldblum, and Harrison Ford, it's just a shame that Mr. Jackson has passed.
A Bolivian television station has mistakenly broadcast two still photos from the American TV farce Lost as images from an Air France airliner which fell into the Atlantic and were forced to apologise when the error got out. The first photograph reportedly shows passengers using oxygen masks, while the second depicts a passenger being sucked out of the plane as its tail breaks off from the rest of the aircraft. According to the news presenter, the photographs had been recovered from the digital memory card of a Brazilian actor, Paulo Muller. The photos from Lost, a show based on around the survivors of an air crash who land on a strange island, were, surprise, surprise, said to have come to the station via the internet. Now, has anyone considered that Lost might be real, and this might be some sort of cover-up? Could Wolfram Alpha be involved?
No. Can I just say, like, when you're showing this on the news bulletin, surely it clicks to some people. They haven't found any wreckage, they haven't found the black box, yeah. And yet we have this crystal clear footage.
And yet they look suspiciously like actors as well, and they've got makeup on. And can I just say, I do resent you describing Lost as a TV farce.
It's clearly the most ridiculous, idiotic show, aside from...
There's nothing more I enjoy on a Thursday night, come whatever time of the evening it may be, is to watch Lost. There's nothing I prefer more than...
Not even listening to Illuminati, Matteo?
Definitely not. There's nothing I enjoy more than watching 35 of ads interspliced with the occasional bit of TV that goes nowhere.
So, Matteo would rather watch a TV farce than listen to student radio. Shame on you. I ignored your sarcasm, Matteo. According to news.com.au, the Daily Telegraph reports that a Belgian girl who claimed that 56 stars were tattooed on her face while she was sleeping has confessed that she lied and was in fact awake the whole time. The girl, reportedly named Kimberly Vlaminck, I'm having the same problems Casey has with pronunciation, even though I wrote this, who initially claimed that she had fallen asleep after asking for only 3 stars, then woke in horror to discover her face entirely covered and is said to have lied after her father saw the stars and was furious. The girl, who at first threatened to sue, has since conceded in an interview with Dutch TV that I asked for 56 stars and initially adored them, but when my father saw them, he was furious, so I fell asleep and said that the tattoo artist had made a mistake. Guys, is the father's fury fair? Would you be seeing stars in his position?
Oh, Chris.
That was very good, Chris. Do you know where I sort of thought there was something suspicious about the girl's claims? When she claimed to have fallen asleep whilst getting tattoos on her face. I have it on good authority that tattoos are painful and the face is kind of a sensitive area.
What if she'd been sold painkillers by a girl at her school?
Yeah, ibuprofen perhaps. Well, but no, and frankly, I always kind of knew she was lying and maybe she's getting her comeuppance.
You were rambling. You were rambling. The BBC reports that Indian defence scientists are planning to use one of the world's hottest chili powders as the key ingredient in a new form of hand grenade, which will be used in riot control and counterinsurgency operations. The idea is reportedly meant to replace the explosives currently used in small hand grenades with a variety of red chili, Bahut Jolokia, which is 1,000 times hotter than common kitchen chili, in order to immobilise people without killing them. So, guys, if you were a rioter or terrorist that was victim to such a grenade, do you think you'd find it too hot to handle?
I think I would. I'm not great with the spicy food. That is ingenuity. I like
now,
that.
Now, guys, can I just say, we here at Left, Right and Centre, we don't normally go in for cultural sort of stereotyping and profiling. We think it's kind of cheap and a bit tawdry, really, and just crude. But really, the...
Sorry, that was a mistake. Keep going. Sorry, that was...
I wasn't rambling that time. Indian defence scientists here really aren't doing themselves many favours. I mean,
they are sort of perpetuating the stereotype.
They're perpetuating the stereotype.
I don't think they are, because they were very ingenious. Weren't they trying to come up with... Oh, no, sorry, that was a South Korean... I'm sorry. No,
it was India. Earlier in the Left, Right, Center season.
Space naan.
That's right.
Indian scientists were actually trying to develop a form of naan that could be used in space.
I think this is actually just another sign of Indian ingenuity. According to Sail World, citing Ananova, citing Austrian business paper Wirtschaftsblatt.
Good German, Chris.
Austrian, well, I mean, it's the same. Anyway, Russian luxury yachts are offering pirate hunting cruises off the coast of Somalia. The cruises, which allow wealthy individuals to patrol the most dangerous waters in the world for a small fee of £3,500 per day, deliberately cruise close to the coast of Somalia at a speed of 5 nautical miles in an attempt to attract pirates, and then retaliate with grenade launchers, machine guns, and rocket launchers. Passengers can reportedly pay an extra £5 per day for an AK-47 and £7 for 100 rounds of ammo. According to Russian yachtsman Vladimir Mironov, the pirate hunters, or privateers, are worse than the pirates. At least the pirates have the decency to take hostages. These people are just paying to commit murder. Guys, a lot of the news reports say that they hope this story is some sort of a sick joke. Am I the only one who really, really hopes that this story is for real?
I don't know. I don't know what to think of that. They're paying to hunt pirates on the seas near Ethiopia.
Yeah. Can I just say, as the resident Polish co-host of Left, Right and Center, of course, just being next door, sort of on the good side of Russia, I'd say this is a story that surprises me. The Russians are not a militaristic, sort of aggressive nationality. And to do this for sport, no less, for tourism, for money, I'm amazed.
You make a good point, Mateo. The Russians have never cared about the military or money or sport, and it's a surprise.
It amazed me that they did this.
Crop circles in Tasmania are not caused by aliens or humans, but by stoned wallabies, the BBC says. According to Tasmanian Attorney General Lara Giddings, the marsupials have been getting into the poppy fields where 50% of the world's legally grown opium, used to make painkillers such as morphine, is grown, eating it and creating crop circles while hopping around as high as a kite. According to the mildly amusingly named Rick Rockliffe, spokesman for poppy producer Tasmanian Alkaloids, who also make batteries, there have also been many stories about sheep that have eaten some of the poppies after harvesting, and they all walk around in circles. Now, the BBC seems to be running this story as humorous, but I think drug abuse is a serious issue, and we need to make an example of these drug fiends. Is zero tolerance the answer, guys? Man, Chris. I suck at this. I'm trigger happy. I'm trigger happy,
perhaps
Tim.
Should be zero tolerance for you, Chris.
Absolutely. I think these wallabies and sheep have to be exposed to a safe poppy eating rooms.
Or harm minimization. But no, I think zero tolerance is the way to go. And the way to begin is definitely with sheep, because if what sheep do whilst they're high is walk around in circles, I think we can probably safely say that most sheep in the world are quite high all of the time.
Good point. Rather than going to a 10-year high school reunion, a freelance comedy writer, Andrea Wachner, that's not right, hired a stripper named Cricket to impersonate her at the event and made a documentary about it. Slashdot reports that, to the great surprise of the Left, Right and Centre team, some of her classmates didn't think the prank/film was funny. And when she posted clips on YouTube from her 40-minute documentary, there was an outcry from the 95 alumni. Now, I have a sort of a grab bag of things from the documentary, and I think you'll find it's actually quite reasonable and not offensive at all.
Hi, I'm Andrea Wagner. I'm Andrea.
Am I the only stripper in the class? Oh, did my tits get in the way? Sorry.
You can be very proud that I just won the award for most tattoos.
Quite a reasonable statement there by Cricket the stripper. So, guys, what are your zany plans for your 10-year reunion? Tim, will you be hiring a male stripper to impersonate you engaging intercourse with a cactus?
I don't know why you're continuing with this line of questioning.
I don't quite get the vilification of Tim on air tonight. I feel I have to jump to his defence, which is not something I do often. Often I actively participate in the mockery. But tonight I think I should put a stand to it, really. But can I just say, that would not have been a boring 10-year reunion. It would have been one of the rare ones that would have been bearable without alcohol.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's actually quite true, and I think what you'll find is that...
You're a little bit distracted, Chris, that's what we'll find.
Well, look...
Yeah, it's quite an interesting way of going about it, a reunion, I don't know.
Well, she certainly left her mark on the class and the reunion forever. I mean, I'm not sure what she was voted most likely to be in high school, but I think we can say with safety that she's probably confounded all those expectations.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Chris.
Wasn't that fantastic? Look, can I just say on my first Rapid Fire News reading experience, I think I added something dynamic. You know, like I was dynamic, and but I just need to iron out a few holes. So I think we'll all look forward to Casey being back next week.
Absolutely.
Hi, this is Liz from the Games Club. We're down at O Week on the lawns at the Bar Smith. And we're here for O Week, and this is Student Radio.
The Doors there with their rendition of the Howlin' Wolf classic Backdoor Man. And we've had a comment from a listener. Michael wants to know, if somebody tweeted that I was dead on my Twitter page after twacking it, would that make them a twat? And I'd like to say, Michael, yes it would.
Chortle.
Indeed.
Guffaw, even.
Mm.
Tim.
Right. Interesting news coming out of
Honduras.
Now, I've been making mistakes about calling it
Haiti. It's not Haiti.
Haiti.
Then you claimed that you knew it was a country that started with T, but you also thought it might be the Dominican Republic.
Do you mean H, perhaps? Anyway. Instead of T? Yes,
I do.
I think he does.
Never do the alphabet on radio.
Indeed. Yes, there's been a coup in Honduras.
Not just any coup,
Not just any coup. This is a pretty hilarious one. Essentially, the president, Manuel Zelaya, in fact, has been... essentially, he wanted to run a plebiscite, which is like a referendum, but it's non-binding, to just to gauge the population's interest in amending the constitution so as to extend to remove the term limit and allow him to serve a second term. This has been ruled unconstitutional by the Supreme Court, and I think he's been trying very hard.
He's been trying for quite a while to
get this through.
This.
And the court, as a resolution for this, has ordered the military to depose the president, which I think is one of the most ridiculous things here. And the reporting from the Christian Science Monitor, reputable news source, has claimed that at 200 masked Honduran soldiers whisked him out of the country in his presidential airplane and dumped him unceremoniously in Costa Rica's international airport, get this, still wearing his pyjamas.
And yes, apparently the mustachioed and self-styled cowboy president was rousted from his bed at about 5:30 in the morning.
It was a lynch mob, a veritable lynch mob.
Indeed.
Well, they didn't lynch him, they just whisked him away.
It can also just be used as a term for a mob who...
Okay.
Can I just say, military coups are ridiculous usually. That the military is seen as a valid check and balance on the government is an absurd notion. But that a court, the highest court in the land, is going to say to the military, right, we've had enough of this joker, we would like you to depose him, please.
Well, to be fair, I mean, like, it does seem like a bit of a joker. He's a cowboy, and yet he wears his pyjamas.
Well, can I say, this is remarkable, I'd say, on two counts, because most coups do tend to involve a lot of, death. This one has been, bloodless. And also, I would like to maybe make the listener think about, perhaps, an Australia, it being analogous to Australia, it would just be the equivalent of our High Court just telling Angus Houston, we've had just about enough of Mr. Rudd. We'd like you to please sort of take care of him. Just whisk him away to maybe... Does Nauru have an airport? An airstrip?
I don't know.
In his PJs, in his tin pyjamas.
I'm pretty sure the whole island is an airstrip, actually.
I guess basically we can all decide this is ridiculous and hilarious. Can we finish? I think Chavez had something interesting to say about this.
Hugo Chavez, who's the head of a group of Central and South America.
It's like the meeting of two crazy leaders.
Well, there's a whole group of little lefty leaders, and they're all not very unhappy with this, because I imagine they all feel very threatened being deposed by the Supreme Court. And he had something to say. In solidarity with Zelaya, Chavez had, and I've got the quote here, "We have to get Zelaya's cowboy hat back. It's still intact. Tomorrow we will rescue his hat." Obviously, he left it behind when he was only in his pyjamas.
Well, whether they rescued the hat is, we're not really sure. But it's good to see that Mr. Chavez has his finger on the pulse.
And I think the hat is a symbol of his leadership. It's like the flag in an army. If you capture the flag,
and
demoralise the troops.
Also, I wonder if it's similar to Samson and his hair. I wonder if the leader loses the power without the hat. Well, I mean, clearly he does. Because he lost power
just
without
the same
his hat.
As Tim will lose his power without his beard.
Without his beard. He'll just go out for eating and sleeping.
People will be able to fool him. You'll be able to go up to Tim. You'll be able to say something. He won't know whether you're telling the truth or not.
I think this conversation has...
You can't fool a man with a beard.
I think this conversation has degenerated. And I think I've had enough of it. And I think this should be the end of the show, guys.
Well, we've got to outroduce ourselves. Extraduce ourselves, Tim.
If only to annoy Tim.
Can I further say, Tim, I think you were very right to draw a line through that issue at that time.
I'm surrounded by such funny men. I've been Timothy, and it's been lovely talking to you.
Marking my triumphant return to the airwaves has been Mateo.
I've been Chris, and I've been stumbling my way through paneling the show this week. Stumbling.
No, you've done a really good job.
Can I actually say, though, I also did it last week, and no one knew, because I did it except for the 2 seconds of silence. Casey never would have left a two-second silence.
I knew you did it last week, but I didn't bring it up because it was really, really good.
We told you. No, Mateo, shut up. This is Crap Chat. I'll press the Law and Order button if you don't stop.
I don't want you to press the Law and Order button.
As I said, I've been Chris.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, as always, at
12 to 1. And you should tune into the rest of Student Radio, because it's all pretty brilliant.
And Radio Adelaide.
Radio Adelaide as well.
We will leave you with a punchy, upbeat number. This is Black and White Radio, coincidentally enough, by British India. Good night.